Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey, only on LA Talk Radio.
Indeed. Welcome to the show. Today is Tuesday, December 15th. We're back with you. And of course, Kelsey's here with me.
Hello.
I'm not going to let her go. So she's stuck here every morning now.
Woohoo.
How are you doing, Kelsey?
I'm good.
We took a little day off yesterday. But today we have a special guest in the studio. We'll get to him in just a second.
Yes.
It's going to be a very interesting show.
It is. I'm intrigued by the topic.
So yeah.
I think you guys are going to like it too.
Absolutely. So just to cover a couple of things, I guess you just mentioned about the threat to the LA school district.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And there was, I think everybody has heard it by now, even though it just happened, but I guess there was a bomb threat or something. That it wasn't even specific as to what kind of violence, right?
They haven't specified, but...
Right. They're not telling us much yet.
All of the LA public schools are shut down today.
Shut down completely.
Which is kind of crazy. I don't know what the world is coming to.
Yeah, I know. They're saying, the superintendent says it's a rare threat because it's aimed at students. Usually that's not the case. But they're not saying much yet. So we don't know what's going on, but the situation is pretty dire, and I hope that they're going to take care of this, because like you said, I mean, that's pretty much, I think, the sentiment on Facebook is like, what have we come to, you know? I mean,
right.
At this point, it's like, there's no end to this.
It's really crazy, because even when I was in grade school, which I like to think wasn't that long ago, when we had...
You just got out of there.
Right? Yesterday. But when we had a bomb threat or something like that, we would just go to the football field and wait in the stands for a few minutes. And, you know, once all was clear, we'd walk back into school. So everything has just changed so much. And it's become such an issue. And, you know, we were talking about gun violence a few shows ago, and... You know how we stand on that, but but it's interesting how it's all going to play out.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's a big charge debate, and we'll see what's going to happen.
I want to know what the specific threat was.
Yeah, I know.
I'm ready for them to release that.
Yeah, I know. So that's they're saying they got a similar threat in New York, but the police commissioner thinks it's a hoax. Mm. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, this is obviously breaking news. And talking about debate, tonight the final debate for this year is going to happen, the Republican debate.
Oh, my, the Trump show.
Tonight in Vegas, right. I hope... Well, tonight I think it's really... I think the tide is starting to turn... And I think people are already starting to consider alternatives to Trump. So right now, Ted Cruz is pretty much in the spotlight. And so they're saying tonight it's probably going to be him and Rubio trying to, take the lead. And because I don't know how it's going to happen with Trump. But I think he's pretty much,
a refreshing change.
Yeah, he talked himself out of the presidency, I think, at this point, having alienated just about everybody.
And, well, we'll see. I mean, goodness, stranger things have happened.
No, that's true. But he's not going to win against Hillary. That's for sure.
Right. So, well, that's the thing. I mean, it's completely destroying the Republican Party, needless to say.
It is. And if he decides he's going to go independent, that's going to be a total breakdown there, because Hillary's pretty much handed the presidency.
Right. I mean, she's just sitting there happy, you know, watching this all unfold.
Everybody's fighting it out, you know. So it'll be very intriguing to watch the debate tonight. And I'm really curious to see what's going to happen.
Can you imagine America with Trump as president?
It's hard
the
to
White
imagine.
House would have like big gold columns. I don't know.
And all his entire staff will be hot chicks and stuff.
This is a guy
that said he dated his daughter because she's so attractive.
Ew, that is so disgusting.
Isn't it, though?
I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
The application would read, like, no double D's need not apply. to the Trump White House.
Probably,
staff.
Yeah, yeah. Goodness. And he'd fire everybody. Yeah. I mean, I can't believe that he went from The Apprentice to running for president, you know.
Well, he's an entertainer.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. That's very clear to see.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, in the beginning, look, I read his book. I thought he had some great points. In the beginning, he was, you know, he made a lot of sense. But I feel disappointed and betrayed because I feel he's gone overboard and my support is no longer behind him, you know, because I can't. I mean, it's embarrassing to go and buy his book. It's people are scared to identify with him or say that they like him. You know, who a person like this cannot. Like that is not going to be elected president.
Right. Well, I think initially people were just so desperate for something different.
Yeah.
Something out of the norm of typical politicians.
Exactly.
And he spoke his mind. He wasn't, quote unquote, politically correct.
Right.
And so I think people found that refreshing.
Yeah.
At first.
Exactly. Because he says what he thinks. But God knows, I don't think we need to know everything that he thinks.
Exactly. You know? I mean, a filter is a good thing.
Yeah, it really is, you know.
To a point.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I don't know. But if I get what I want, I would like to see Marco Rubio because I think he's the best option for the Republican Party. And since I am going to vote Republican, I'd like someone who's actually who knows his stuff, you know.
Right.
And from what I've seen, he knows his stuff. So we'll see. You know, at this point, it's hard to know. But you know what? A year from now, everything's going to change. You know, by the time we're ready to vote for the president. So it's too premature to talk about
anything. It's a long way away.
Really. It really is. You know, and the primaries sort of like drag, you know, over several months and stuff. So we'll see.
Yeah.
So, okay, so that's the debate. We also talked about the LA USD schools. And I also see a headline about Bill Cosby suing 7 of his accusers for defamation.
Oh, goodness. So,
yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Good luck to him on that. You know, I mean, why would he want to keep this alive? I don't know, you know.
But well, it's just...
He's already destroyed.
Exactly. It's completely bizarre. And yeah. I just find it very suspect that so many people would have the same story. And, you know, people who aren't really getting anything out of it.
Yeah.
I mean...
That's true. And some people, it's hard for them to do, you know, to come forward.
Right. And... You know, we won't mention names, obviously, here, but just being involved in the industry, I have met some women who say it happened to them.
Really?
I'm not kidding.
Wow.
I'm not kidding.
So he got around.
Yes. One lady who is a friend of a friend said that, yeah, he invited her over to go to the movies with he and his wife, and luckily she brought a male friend with her because when she got to the residence... Miss Cosby was nowhere to be found.
Really? Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
And so luckily she was suspicious and got out before anything happened.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So that was a good thing.
Yeah.
But I believe it. I think that it's all true.
And they were all young women, right? I mean, some of them, were they underage? Some of them, or maybe not?
I don't know. But, you know, it's just... Being in the entertainment industry has been completely alming.
Really?
To me, it has, because you run into so many people that just take advantage of their power position.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's kind of what he was doing.
Yeah.
You know?
He Absolutely.
Was and in a position of power.
Right.
He was the most popular, you know, sitcom actor at the time, was making millions of dollars, and people... felt young women particularly who were trying to make it in the industry felt like they didn't have a leg to stand on and couldn't stand up to this guy.
Right.
So, you know, and I see it all the time in the industry today. You know, it's, oh, do this for me and I'll do that for you.
Wow, well, really?
Yeah, oh, of course. Well, and it's really despicable, so.
Yeah. Well, the life of being a hot woman, what can I tell you, you know?
I know, it's treacherous.
All right. Well, we're going to bring in our guest now. You have the book, right? You have a copy of the book. I have all the notes here as well. We have Mr. Richard Giordano in the studio. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you very much for having me, Sam.
Of course. Thank you for joining us. And you contacted me about your book. It's called Supercharged Learning. How Wacky Thinking and Sports Psychology Make It Happen. Wow. That totally grabbed me. Mm. And you were very polite in the email and everything. So I thought, of course, we're going to have him on the show. So now I understand you're visiting us from somewhere else.
Yes, I live west of Denver, about 45 minutes at 9,000 feet in the mountains. And I was on my way out here. As I mentioned before, we went on air here. I did Fox News radio show yesterday, and I'm going up to Ventura to do a program up there. It'll start on Wednesday.
Very nice. So you did a book tour?
A little bit, yeah. I did one a while back. Did some radio and television back then, and so I'm kind of continuing it right now.
Sounds good. And you handle most of your promotion yourself, right?
Yes,
all
I
the
do.
PR and everything.
Yes,
that's the way to do it. You know, be involved in it. You know, don't just let a publicist send you anywhere. You know. Mm-hmm. So that's very good. So you're involved with the book, and I would imagine it's probably pretty successful, right? When did you publish the book?
The book came out. It's published by Roman and Littlefield, and it came out last November, a year ago in November.
Oh, okay, and it's still going strong.
Yeah, it's doing well.
Very good. It's a kind of a book where it doesn't have to have a certain timeliness to it. It's timeless. So
it's evergreen.
Exactly. You know. So it's not like it captures a point in time. But it's like, you know, usually I'm thinking of like things, that phenomenon happening with children's books and movies. When you think about it, we constantly have new generations of kids. So these movies last forever, you know. It's not like adult things that sort of like just disappear and we move on to the next one. There's always going to be people liking The Little Mermaid. And,
it's so true.
You know?
Yeah. You know, I know a lot of young girls, like age around 12, 13, and they still watch Clueless and Mean Girls and
all
the things that I watched as a kid, which I found completely perplexing because I thought that they had moved on and found newer kid movies. But nope, the classics are the classics.
Yeah. So you've written a timeless book, which is makes a lot of sense, and we'll talk about it. So you were in Utah yesterday. You were here today. Are you driving or are you flying?
I'm driving.
You're driving? Driving. Wow, what a cool thing to do.
Yeah.
It's perfect weather. It's not too hot. And you're coming from snow. Do you guys have snow already?
Yeah, there's snow there. So I got out in time. I beat a little bit of a storm. And once I got past Vail, Colorado, the roads were clear and dry.
Oh, nice. So have you always lived in Colorado?
No, I grew up on the south side of Chicago. And
I went to
Michigan State University for 3 degrees, bachelor's, master's, ed specialist. And then I came to Colorado and I wound up getting a doctorate from the University of Colorado in Boulder.
I see. So you're pretty literate, let's say.
Let's hope so.
Scholarly.
We'll see.
But that's very cool. You know, I mean, I love learning as well, and you obviously need that stimulation. And so you go back to school and learn new things. So that's very cool. So you grew up in Chicago.
I did.
What suburb of Chicago?
Well, I was on the far south side, and at that time it was a small community that was called Roseland, and it was formerly a Christian Reformed Dutch community, and then, as you can tell, my ancestors are Italian, so it went to the Italians. The neighborhood went down there, down here from there.
It was confiscated by the Italians.
Yeah, it was, and now. It is predominantly black, and unfortunately, it's as Thomas Wolfe said, you can't go home again because that is one of the most high crime rates in the city.
Wow.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
Very, very gang infested right now, which, of course, none of which was true when I was living there.
Yeah, so that's sad.
It's very sad. Yeah.
And obviously, Chicago is going through some problems right now.
Serious problems.
Yeah, yeah. So you ended up in Colorado because you went to school there and you decided I'm going to stay there?
When I graduated from Michigan State with a bachelor's, I taught 4 years. And I was in that interim time, I was going back to school, getting degrees, and I went into the high school principalship. and was an assistant principal in Michigan for a while, then a principal there, and I came to Colorado to accept a principalship in a ski town called Telluride.
Oh, wow.
And so I was there for a year, and then I went to Durango, Colorado, where they have the train. Everybody knows about the train.
Except me.
Except you.
The Durango train, is that what it is?
Yeah, it's the narrow gauge train that goes up into the mountains.
Oh, okay.
But
learn new things every day.
Big I know.
Yeah. Very nice. So you got used to the cold weather, but I guess you came from cold weather too, right?
Yeah,
so it doesn't bother you.
No, not at all.
So you're thinking that we're just a bunch of babies up here in L.A. Like, oh, it's cold.
Pretty nice. It's pretty nice.
Oh, goodness. This is chilly for us.
Yeah. So you were a teacher off and on. What grades were you, was it middle school, high school?
Yeah, when I was teaching, Sam, I taught 6th, 7th, and 8th grades, pretty much what would be called middle school.
Right.
And I taught general science, biology, pretty much all the sciences in a general context.
Wow.
Oh, you're brave, middle school.
Yeah, and an intelligent person. You see, I love people like this. We could sit and talk for hours, you know, because so it's like sometimes with the family, you know, I go and I get bored very quickly. It's like, what are we talking about, you know? I mean, give me some meaty conversations, you know?
Right.
So I get bored and I...
Well, I'm lucky.
I'm always the first one to leave.
I come from a family of teachers, so I guess I'm lucky in that respect.
Yeah, there you go.
Mom was a teacher, sisters of... Vice principal, answer teachers.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. In your little town there?
Or the area, per se. it's pretty cool.
So so is this the first book you wrote?
Yes, it is.
And how did the book come about?
Well, several years ago, I was a high school principal, as I mentioned, and then I left that profession and I did several other things. But what I did several years ago is I started wanting to remain in education in some way, and so I started a program. I put together a program from scratch to work with university elite athletes. And I took that program. The very first place I worked was Indiana University, where I worked with their incoming scholarship freshman football players. Mm. Bill Lynch was the head football coach at Indiana University at that time, Big Ten school. And I did some work there in the summer in their orientation program with their incoming athletes. They had about a class of about 60 incoming full-ride athletic scholarship students, all freshmen, and they run, as most elite schools do, big program schools, they run what they call an orientation program or a bridge program in the summer for the athletes. And these kids come in, they don't have much time off from graduation from high school, and they come in sometimes within a couple of weeks of when they graduate high school as seniors.
Oh, really? So they get no break at all?
They get very little break, and they are on campus from then on. And the purpose of that bridge program in the summer is to acclimate them to the school. They enroll in a couple of classes, and they generally learn the ropes, so to speak.
Right.
There's special programs for athletes because they're so incredibly busy with sports and as well their academics.
Right.
So I was involved in that program to give them some extra tools to help them succeed academically and remain eligible.
Very cool.
So that's why you got interested in helping athletes, because they're so busy and they need something.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I, you know, from there, I worked at the University of Notre Dame. Central Michigan, Eastern Illinois, some other places. And that's how the book basically has its origins. It came out of athletes wanting to be bigger, faster, and stronger on the field. And I translate that into showing students, or anyone really, how to learn bigger amounts of information, learn it faster, and hold it much more strongly over time, remember it.
Yeah. So you're obviously very qualified, because it's sort of like the perfect situation for you to come up with a book like this. You know? I mean, you get into, you're intimately familiar with the sports and learning and all that stuff, so I can see how you would put it all together. Very interesting. Did the idea for the book just come to you one day, or was it mm-hmm. something that you've established for a while?
Sam, it kind of evolved as most things do. It's not like you wake up with this epiphany and say, oh, I'm going to write a book.
Okay.
I guess it does work that way for some people.
Maybe. If you're Stephen King or something.
Yeah, but for me, having been a school person for many years, I wanted to do something essentially for parents. The book is really written for parents who want to re-engage with their children's schooling, which I think is a very critical issue today. Parents feel somewhat estranged from their schools because they become so big and impersonal. There'll be high schools with several thousand students. And,
that's true.
It's very difficult for a parent to engage on the ground in the school. So this book shows parents how they can, in their homes, have a tremendous impact on working with their kids to help them learn, and they don't have to have any kinds of content knowledge about subject matter.
That's true, and I think many parents become intimidated by the math and the science that the kids bring home, and they're like, I can't help him, you know?
Yeah.
And it's so I can see where this would come in handy, you know, because it's like a parent, like you said, you want to be engaged, you want to be part of that, and not just dump your kid on the school, you mm-hmm. know, you want to be part of their development, you know.
Right.
And so I can see, so this is aimed at the parents. Now, I'm looking at the book here, and I was looking at it before, of course, and there's, in big letters, a foreword by Benjamin S. Carson, Senior, M.D., Now, get out of here. I mean, you got a foreword by Ben Carson?
Well, I do. He's a very gracious man. And let me just say that whatever your political alignments might be, I can tell you that the man that you see on television, the way he speaks, the thoughtfulness, his demeanor, that's exactly who he is in really? A one-on-one conversation.
Yeah.
When I wrote the book, or I was in the process of writing the book, I was familiar with Dr. Carson because I'd read at that time, all seven of his books. I'm quite impressed with his background.
Yeah, he'd written
quite a few books before this. Yeah,
right.
And he has his own scholarship fund for students, kindergarten up through high school.
Oh, wow.
And so I thought he might be interested. So through a series of contacts, I wound up sitting in his office at Johns Hopkins when he was still practicing head of neurosurgery, pediatric neurosurgery.
Uh-huh.
And we had a good conversation, and he graciously agreed to write the foreword.
Wow, very
That's
nice.
That's exciting.
Very nice. And probably a year ago when you released the book, maybe not many people knew about him, but God knows now everybody does, you know.
Yeah.
And I like him. I happen to like him. I think he's very well spoken. Mm-hmm. He seems like an honest person, you know.
Yeah, he's very, very, from my perception and the short time I've known him, he's very honest.
Yeah, huh? Yeah. We'll see. We'll see what kind of support he gets. But he's sort of like been losing support lately.
Mm-hmm.
And but regardless, you have that forward there, and that's not going to be taken away. All right. Well, so let's get a little bit into the book and stuff. You're saying that wacky thinking and sport psychology. Let's talk a little bit about this. What's wacky thinking, and how does that relate to supercharged? Well, what's supercharged learning? Let's first find out what the title means.
Well, supercharged learning is the combination, Sam, of the wacky thinking and the sports psychology. And the reason I use the supercharged is because it's the same paradigm as a supercharged automobile engine, which I describe in the book. And for those who are mechanically inclined in automobile engines, you'll recognize that a supercharged engine just takes what's already there, a volume of air and a volume of gasoline in a cylinder, and it increases both to create a greater explosion, which is a supercharged engine. So in learning is basically everything we learn today is essentially 80 to 90% is linguistic. It's words. You read it or you hear it. Some experiential things like touching the proverbial hot stove, that's experiential learning. There's no words involved other than the one you yell. but most everything else is words, and words are intrinsically boring. And so if you can infuse or supercharge what you're trying to learn by adding emotion, physicality, and visual you will exponentially increase the potential for learning and retaining information.
Right.
And you will be able to learn things by silly, wacky kinds of associations
with right.
things. It's a process that I call, and it's not a vulgar process, it's called making up crap.
Yeah.
And crap is silliness, absurdity, and things that have no foundation in reality.
So it's right. kind of like acronyms almost a little, huh?
Some acronyms, but it's a lot broader than that, Kelsey,
yeah.
because it involves infusing or supercharging with these three, emotion, physical, and visual. And
very interesting. So, but I've heard that, you know, when you're emotional and whatever it is that you're feeling, you're more bound to retain that information, right?
Because, that is correct.
Right. And you're talking about associations, and that's really how people think. You know, we go from one subject to the other and stuff. And so this totally makes sense, you know. So that's the thing. It's like I'm thinking, you know, in school, it is just words, you know. They don't mm-hmm. really, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, and I have a problem with teachers that, you know, you go into the class, they give the students a few things to read and then write, and that's about it. That's the extent of their instruction in the class. And I think there needs to be a lot more communication, verbal communication and instruction than there is now.
One of the things that I've found, and I've been in hundreds of teachers' classrooms. My job as a principal was to evaluate the teaching performance of my staff,
right.
the staffs that I had. So I've been in hundreds of classrooms observing teachers teach. And what I find particularly at the secondary level is that there's not so much of a teaching person in front of the room as a presenting person. Mm-hmm. They present information and leave it up to the student to figure out how to attach to it, how to take it in, organize right. it, file it, and then bring it back up again. Remember it.
Right.
And so this is where parents, and I'm not being critical of teachers. There are lots of areas wherein I could, but that's not one of them, because with a class, let's say, conservatively of 30 students, you cannot possibly, as a teacher, know who those people are and what are the points of attachment that would help them attach new learnings to old things. And right. that's a lot of how we learn, by attaching, as you said, the new things we want to learn to the things we already know.
So that's where the parents come in, because
that's right.
they know the experiences of the individual child.
They know literally all of the people, places, and things of their children's lives and all of the points of attachment. And so if they use this wacky thinking and then energize it through ideal performance state principles of sports psychology, which is the second part, they can really help their children learn beyond what they would ever expect.
Right. Well, I wanted to... Oh, I have your website here. We're talking to Richard Giordano, and his book is Supercharged Learning, and the website is superchargedlearning.com. And you can find out more about it, and there's some excerpts from the book as well. I'm currently reading about 7 books, mm-hmm. so I haven't got a chance to get to this one yet, but it's on the list, and I am going to read it because it's fascinating to me. You know, I mean, anything that has to do with learning is fascinating to me. So let's talk a little bit about that emotional part that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
How would a teacher go about that then, rather than just words? How would they get through to their students in a better way, would you say?
Well, the problem, Sam, is that it's very difficult for a teacher to do that with 30 different unique individuals sitting
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Right.
The parent, as Kelsey said, knows the emotional issues of the child and can attach. But there are some examples that are kind of generic. For example, let me give you an example of cause you to learn a new word. Now, maybe you know this, and if you do, don't say it, because your audience, probably 90% will not know it. But I'm going to cause you to learn a word. You don't even want to know the word, but when I leave here today, neither you nor Kelsey will ever be able to forget the word or what it means, and you never maybe even heard it before. But let me ask you, since Dr. Carson wrote the foreword, and he's a preeminent neurosurgeon, this is something to do with the brain.
Right.
Well, in the brain, the centers for memory, where all memory starts, there are two of them, and they're one on either side of the temporal lobes, and they're a Latin name. Do you know that name by chance?
Thalamus or something? No.
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 Kelsey?
You what, know, like, my college psychology teacher is going to kill me because she taught us something, elephant something,
well,
to go with it.
Let me just give you the word, and then you won't ever forget it.
Okay.
And I'll tell it. I'll give it to you this way. I could tell you the word, but let me describe the word. And it's through a little personal event that I went through myself. I was visiting Stanford University a few weeks ago. And I was parked in my car waiting to go onto the campus, waiting at a red light, and the traffic was moving the other direction, and all of a sudden everything stopped. And all of a sudden my car lurched to the right, and I looked to the left, and there was a huge hippopotamus that walked past my car and onto the campus.
Oh, wow.
And then it lurched the other direction.
I knew it had something to do with a hippo or an elephant
and
or something.
Then
so he's telling us a story now.
Then the other hippo on the other side of the car walked past, brushed the car, and the two of the hippos walked onto the campus at Stanford. And so it occurred to me that Stanford University is the center of learning and where people go to improve their memory and remembering. So Stanford clearly has to be what you could call the hippo campus or the hippocampus.
Okay.
And that, of course, Kelsey, is the is the brain structure that is responsible for learning.
Wow. There you go.
Now,
the reason
you'll remember that is because I created in you, and story is very powerful, I created in you a visual and a physical and an emotional response to that. Right. And if you think about it, you remember things when you were a child because they impacted you that way.
That's true. And there was something there, you know. I mean, something, you know, if you notice, sometimes like a fragrance or something will remind you of something in the past, right?
Scent and, is very yeah,
scent
to memory,
and,
yes.
And music or things like that. And that's because those were emotional moments.
That's right.
Somehow.
That's right.
I'll never forget, I was in Vegas one time and my girlfriend was like, oh my God, that smells like Casey. Her ex-boyfriend. And I'm like, oh good Lord. Here, have another drink. So yes, it's very powerful.
So, but why do you call it wacky thinking? What's wacky about it? Explain.
Well,
that
it's because obviously what I just said to you was I was making up crap.
You're making up a story.
I mean, obviously,
yeah,
there were no hippos.
It was
right.
Wacky.
And
right.
I've never been
okay,
to Stanford gotcha. University, so
right.
I'm just making up crazy stuff. There are lots of examples of that. For example, I won't go through it now, but. You could learn a process called photosynthesis. Do you know what that is?
Yeah.
Yes, it
that's
has to do with plants.
Yeah. It has to do with plants.
Turning the
energy,
oxygen,
turning
into,
oxygen into energy.
Turning CO2 into oxygen, right?
No.
The other way around.
Oh, heck.
Yeah, you're right about that. It is turning CO2 to oxygen. But what it is it's generating it. It's a green plant that is making its own food. And there are 13 elements that the plant draws from the soil to do that. And I could get you to remember all 13 of those in a second just by telling you about a little fat Italian guy who runs a restaurant that's famous for serving good salt.
Uh-huh.
Not the food, the salt.
Right.
So there are ways that you can make up goofy stuff and lock in very serious stuff.
That's true, yeah. Wow, that makes sense, you know.
So cool.
Yeah. So, I'll have to start thinking of wacky things.
That's
to,
right.
To explain this to people. Now, how can this help parents? Does this help them, like, what they call in the cliche, think outside the box?
Well, I've heard that all the time, and to me, I don't think we should even think there is a box.
Okay.
I don't know why we have to feel constrained that if certain ways we do things are outside of some kind of a paradigm that someone
right.
else has imposed.
Right.
So I just think that what parents can do is they can do with their children. What I found with athletes, these 18-year-old kids coming in from high school playing football, Well, you see them on television, or if you go to a football game, they're huge bodies.
Yeah.
But they're kids. They're just kids, that's and they're true. They have a tremendously zany sense of humor. athletes in general have a great sense of humor, and so if you tap into that and you stir that and attach serious learning to it, it's very easy for them to relate to it. It makes it, you know, years ago in education, the big term was we need to be relevant. Well, this is very relevant, and it's relevant because every one of us in our God-given core have that emotional that you mentioned, Sam, that causes us to behave the way we do. And if we can draw that out and tap into it and attach learning to it, it's very powerful.
Yeah, definitely. So sports psychology, tell us a little bit about that. What does that mean?
Well, every elite athlete, whether it's a man or a woman, professional or amateur, college, they all basically apply what Jim Lohr, the sports psychologist, calls seven principles of achieving what's called the ideal performance state. And the ideal performance state, or an IPS, is what some people will recognize as that white moment on the field where everything is in phase. If you're a football player, you're seeing the field totally. You anticipate the plays. You're ready to go. I mean, it's all there at that right. white moment. And those seven principles that apply to athletics are also tremendously applicable to learning content information. Mm. And all seven of them, if applied, can make a huge difference in how a student is able to learn.
Right. Seven steps. That's a lot.
It's not a lot when you think about that there are natural things that you can cause to happen. For example, one of the IPS strategies is focus. And if there's anything that can be absent in a learning process, it's focus.
Isn't that true?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. But in an athlete, the parallel in the book, throughout the book, I compare athletics and performance on the athletic field to performance in the classroom or in study time. And if you're an athlete, a football player, for example, most people, I don't know if they know this or not, but in front of, I went to Michigan State. And Michigan State's capacity for the football stadium is 76,000.
Wow. That's pretty big.
But invariably, it's over 80 when they play Michigan or Ohio State.
Right.
And when a football player is down in that on that field with 80,000 people screaming, ironically, they don't hear the crowd.
Yeah.
They are so focused and tightly focused that they're there to do a job, and that's the only thing they're concerned about.
Wow, very interesting.
Tunnel vision.
Yeah.
Very much so.
And I would imagine that happens with everybody who performs in front of a crowd, mm-hmm. if they can adopt that way of thinking and training and so forth.
Well, there's a chapter in the book called Sports, Academics, and a Piano Player. And the piano player is a gentleman by the name of Emil Pandolfi. He's an incredible pianist. If any of you have heard any of his CDs, I would definitely recommend you get some. He's an incredibly talented pianist. Mm-hmm. And I got to know Emil a while back, and we communicated, and he wound up writing in this chapter how he applies these seven ideal performance state strategies to his practice time and to his concert performing. Mm-hmm. And he talks about each one of them and how they apply. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that's a good example of a person performing outside of athletics.
Yeah.
And the transition, of course, is a person performing in academics.
Right. Now, are you the one that came up with the seven?
No, that was Dr. James Lohr. He's a okay. sports psychologist, and he wrote that in his book, The New Toughness Training for Sports.
Oh, I see. Okay, so he was directed towards athletes as well. Oh,
he was only athletes. He's
I see.
Totally sports, but I just kind of borrowed his athletic traits and I applied right. them outside of athletics into learning.
Right. Now, does this apply for parents of children of any age?
Any age, and the reason it can and should is that you can tailor this to the emotional maturity and the content knowledge of any age child. Clearly, if you're going to be using wacky thinking, you will use some very elementary, maybe cartoon-type wacky thinking things. for little children to learn things. And then as they get older, of course, the maturity level goes up, and your examples and your paradigms all change.
Right. And, you know, I think if you look at children's literature and stuff, you realize that, or if you want to call it literature, I'm talking about very little kids. But, you know, when they teach them things, it's within stories, you know.
Yes.
I mean, you have all these, you know, little books with that you start feeling the, you know, the fur.
It is.
And things like that, you know. And I can see where that would emotionally get the kid involved, you know, when they're touching, using their senses and so forth to learn.
Well, learning is very, first of all, it's very personal. And you just pointed out something, Sam. The very first learnings were non-linguistic. There were no words involved.
That's true.
Exactly.
That's even before they could speak.
Before they could speak, but they were learning.
Yeah.
Our guest on Friday was talking about that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And then as they get a little bit older, you're very correct. Stories, or the power of story, is remarkably important in terms of learning, because we start telling stories to little children to help them become better people, to become people, to be socialized, and to learn information.
Yeah. Very interesting. Now, does this apply to... and this is for both genders, I would imagine,
oh, yes,
right?
Absolutely.
It works the same way.
Absolutely.
Right.
It's basically association.
There is the core of what I call a synergistic way of thinking, the combination of the physical, visual, and emotional, and linguistic. Mm. The core of that is analogy and association.
Right.
Exactly right.
Okay.
Right. And that's how we learn, pretty much. And that's even how we think, right?
It is.
I mean, if you ever follow a conversation, you realize you start with some topic and you end up with something totally different. But there's always ways. Yeah, but there's ways that they're connected, you know, somehow. You go from one topic to the other, then someone brings something up and you start talking about something completely different.
Right.
But it is associations, I think. And that's how we can learn, like you said, with the hippo and all that. We'll always associate that with Stanford now.
Well, yeah.
The hippo campus.
Well, Leonardo, one thing I didn't put in the book, but there's a great man, Leonardo da Vinci, who is mostly known for his artwork, but he was a brilliant man across a lot of different areas.
Right. And his scientist too, right?
A scientist.
Right.
Engineer, yeah, mathematician. But one thing that's attributed to him, a very famous statement, is he said, learn how to see. Realize everything connects with everything else. And that's exactly what you just said.
Yeah. So that's how the brain works, pretty much.
Yes, it is.
Which is, I think that's the amazing thing about it. That's how we are able to imagine and think so many things and envision them and visualize things, you know. It's because we have that capacity, I think.
We're the only organism on Earth that really has that capacity.
Yeah.
We have what the scientists would call a theory of mind. We don't just have brains, we have a mind, which is a vastly different entity.
Right, which is hard to explain too, right?
It can be.
What's a mind, you know? Very interesting. For those of you just joining us, we're talking to Richard Giordano. The book is Supercharged Learning, How Wacky Thinking and Sports Psychology Make It Happen. And there's a foreword by Ben Carson, and whose books you've read,
yes,
and stuff. So you got to meet him, obviously, in person.
Oh, yes.
And how long ago was that?
It was actually about, I'm trying to think back now, I think it was a little over 2.5-3 years ago, because he was in the last 6 months of his practice of neurosurgery, being the head of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins. And when we met in his office, one of the things that we talked about that I'm a little disappointed he's put off is he talked to me about a book that he was going to be writing, because I said to him, are you a little concerned about being out of the intensity of this work? And he said, oh, I've got enough to do. And, and he described a book he was going to be writing, and I hope he gets to it. But, of course, that's kind of on the back burner, so to speak, now.
Yeah, that's
true. I'm sure he will. Lots of life ahead for him.
Yeah, very cool. So in the final few minutes, by the way, you guys can find out more about the book and about Richard at superchargedlearning.com, And there's all the information you need. You can get the book there. I see you have past appearances and things like that that people can follow and stuff. So that's interesting. Now, so in the final few minutes, what do you suggest for people to be able to think more clearly? I mean, you know, they talk about what your diet, exercise, things like that. I'm sure that has to be all counted into this, right?
I think it does, Sam. My major in at Michigan State, I had a major in physical education and a minor in biology. And I taught mostly biology. I taught some physical education and coached some. But I'm a kind of a three-stool kind of person, spirit, mind, and body. And I don't think that the mind can be adequately generated and developed unless you have spirit and also have, obviously, a healthy body.
Right.
Health is so important today. And if you look around, of course, being a former phys ed person, I look around and see the general condition of our society, and it's very depressing to me.
It is, huh? Because I think today we're just like our work calls for us to just sit on our asses all day, you know? And we don't move, you know? And unless you do some, you know, and in the past it wasn't like that. People would walk places, you know, they do physical things.
But now everything's just so convenient.
Exactly. You know, I mean, remote control, for crying out loud. I remember when they came out, I'm like, what, you're too lazy to get up and change the channels? But now when you have 500 channels, it makes sense, you know?
Exactly.
To have remote control. But no, so I think that's why it's important to at least walk a little bit, you know, jog, you know, work out, do some exercise, you know. And here I'm talking, I do none of that, but I know how important it is.
Do as Sam says, not as he does.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. But I sort of like, I'm telling myself that every day as well. So, and it needs to be done. Final words, Richard, anything that we didn't cover that you want us to know about? Do you have any, like, so you do events. You said you're going to be in Santa Barbara later
I'm
today?
I'm going to be in Ventura.
Okay, Ventura.
It's a radio show. But one of the things, Sam, that I'm trying to do more of these days, since my purpose is to get this information out to parents, is I very much like to work, and I'm looking forward to working with school groups, let's say parent-teacher organizations, kindergarten through eighth grade, athletic booster clubs at the high school or secondary level are very good venues to gather the parents and the kids together to have an evening of discussion about this and to show parents how this works. Service clubs or religious organizations. I was in California last spring, and I spoke to 120 healthcare professionals that work with senior citizens, and the application of these tactics for seniors, so those who are starting to lose memory function, are very powerful. And mm-hmm. so there were a lot of senior healthcare workers there, and nurses and doctors and attorneys, and that was productive. So there isn't any age at which this does not touch someone.
Right.
But I've targeted specifically for parents, because I think that's a terrific need today in our society, and I'm looking forward to anybody that happens to be listening that is involved with a PTA or a parent booster or any organization, they can get to me at the website for the book, and I'd be glad to talk to them.
Sounds great. So you guys can contact Richard through superchargedlearning.com. You also have another site here, makingupcrap.net. Do we want to talk about that one?
Well, that's the original work that I did that I mentioned with the athletes, and the program was called Making Up Crap, and I did that because it was zany, and they like that sort of thing, and they're good at it. So that website has a lot of my the details of the schools I've worked at and recommendations from the professionals at these elite universities that help me connect with their athletes.
Right. Well, Richard Giordano, fascinating man. A lot of new stuff that we learned today. Mm. And, you know, if nothing else, you know, focus on learning. And do it the right way, you know, where it stays with you, you know, because so much stuff we learn and we forget.
That's
and
right.
Parents being involved is really important as well.
That's pivotal.
Very pivotal. Without that, then you can't use these great techniques.
Exactly, <so. laughs> you know, and then you can't blame your kid.
Remember that, parents. Yeah. Go to PTA meetings.
Yeah, if your kid is dumb, don't blame yourself.
Nobody is dumb.
No, but parents definitely need to be involved with their kids. And I think it's so simple to just like stay away from that stuff and not be involved, because it's so easy. You know, the kid goes to school, you dump them off on the school, you don't know what they're doing there. They come home and they present you with their homework and you're like stumped completely.
They're like, okay, you know, Google, right. It's time for you to help me out now.
Exactly. And the parents feel totally frustrated with this.
Well, they know? Do. And the nice thing about this, this what I call a process, Sam and Kelsey, is that it, once again, it's very important that parents understand. They get intimidated because they don't know the geometry, the physics, the chemistry, the biology. Right. But they don't have to know those subjects. What they have to know is what the student needs to learn, and they can help them attach things to the learnings to help them remember. That's
very interesting, yeah. So don't get caught up in the details.
No.
Very cool. Richard Giordano, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
All the best to you. Everybody check out the website and get the book. And I'm sure it's available in bookstores as well and everything.
Bookstores, Amazon is probably the best source. It can be found through the publisher, but I think most people today will go to Amazon.com. And,
right.
It's found there.
Or through Richard's website, too. All right. Well, Richard, thank you again.
Thank you, sir.
All the best to you. Kelsey, thank you.
Oh, my pleasure, as always.
Awesome. And we'll see everybody tomorrow.
Bye, guys.
Listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey, only on LA Talk Radio.